Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the My Wave podcast, a podcast that is all about your wave, your story, your life. And before we get started, huge shout out to Billy at Thorpe Creative. Thank you for everything you do, Billy, all the behind the scenes work. Nothing of this going on could happen without everything you do for us. And a huge shout out as well to our video sponsor, Sully's Archery Tag. Sully's Archery Tag is just played just like dodgeball, except with bow and arrows. They bring the fun to you. And as a personal patron of Sully's Archery Tag, I can vouch for how much fun it actually is. It is intense. It'll keep you going. You'll be sweating all the way, smiling all the way, having a blast. But yeah, go ahead and book yourself an event at sullysarcherytag.com. And if you like what you hear and you want to support it, you ever had a coffee, PK?
I have.
I love coffee.
I do too.
But if you want to support us, feel free to buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/mywave.
Boy, that sure sounds good.
Is not a subscription, just a quick little donation to support what we're doing. And you go to buymeacoffee.com/mywave. You can buy one coffee, 100 coffees, million coffees, as much as you want. It's a $5 virtual coffee. And thank you for supporting. And, well, let's go and get right into it. Today, I have the honor of welcoming our iconic local legend guest, the man who wears a million hats. I've personally known him for a long time. He is an entrepreneur, a creator, a podcast owner, pastor, interim youth pastor, teacher, father, husband, a million other things all in one. He is the iconic, the legendary PK. Welcome, PK. What's
up, Simon? I've never been introduced that way. That was good. I feel like going to find that guy you're just talking about.
Oh, I have not practiced that at all. That was not at all rehearsed.
So if you're listening to this podcast, you'll notice he ain't me.
I ain't him.
And so I had a cancellation, and not quite last minute, but I think it was you that was like, hey, how about I interview you about your best way?
We were out. While we were training for
surf camp.
Another video sponsor, shameless plug, Shredder's Surf Camp. Get your lessons in. But we were out there training, surfing. I looked at him and I was like, so what is your wave? And you were sharing with me. I was like, man, when are you having yours being shared? And I was like, what if I just interviewed you? Just joking. And I was totally joking about it until yesterday when you texted me and you're like, meet me at 6:10. And I was like, okay, I would love to.
Yep. So we met at about 6 o'clock at the Harris Theater across the street. And we're like grabbing some food and we're like, this episode sponsored by Harris Theater. It smells like Harris Theater in here.
Oh yeah. I wish I could know.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's right. Both of us had the Rona at the same time. We had coffee on Friday, and both of us got sick on Tuesday, Monday night, and both hit us hard. That was fun.
Absolutely destroyed Wednesday at like 3 p.m. as soon as I felt it. But man, well, PK.
Yes.
Kyle, PK, what would you like for me to call you today?
You can call me what you want, man.
I would love to call you PK. I've never called you Kyle.
All right.
But how do I know you? Where do we meet?
Had to have been through school with the kids. Oh, like, yeah. You've got older brothers.
Yeah.
At least one. No, I got two.
Got two, yeah.
And then my son's hanging out with your brothers, and then you were hanging out with my son. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, through school, and I think that was it.
Yeah, well, there's a tasty little nugget about how I met you specifically.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember.
All right.
I already forgot the name of it.
Forgot the name
the
of
the WCA Surf Club.
Oh, Board Riders Club.
Board
yeah.
Riders Club.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that. What was your inspiration? How is that still going strong?
No. No. So I came to Wilmington and I was serving as youth pastor at Grace Baptist and then coaching cross country at Wilmington Christian. And I was observing, you know, the gaps in the artsy people, the academic-y people, students, and then the athletic people. And I was like, what about those that like to hunt and fish and those that like to surf and skate? And so I started a outdoor club. So for those that like to hunt and fish, we go do some outdoorsy things. And then I started a board riders club for the surfers and skaters and ended up having a competition here at Wrightsville Beach that year. with the homeschool team that killed everybody. And then I think Ashley was there and Coastal Christian. There was like five or six schools represented. And it was a lot of fun. So, yeah, Board Riders Club was pretty cool.
And I had no idea there was a competition.
Yeah, yeah.
I must have dipped out before I even knew.
Maybe. Dude, maybe. That is now, awesome. Now, just to, so first time I really met you, you haven't changed a lot except for I think Christ has got more of your heart. But my wife and I, when you left, we were like, that kid is totally Eddie Haskell.
You don't know who
Eddie Haskell is?
Oh, man.
Oh, man. you'll have to look him up. Look up Eddie Haskell and find some YouTube clips of of that and then get back with me. You might want to punch me when you're done, but yeah, we're like, this dude is Eddie Haskell.
Can't be worse than what my brothers have brought up to me. Well, PK.
Yeah.
So that was, I guess, my intro into surfing is through the Board Riders Club. Cool. What was your intro into surfing? Like, how did you find your love? How did you just, like, what led you to be a surfer?
Yeah, so we always vacation in the Outer Banks. Well, backing up, we vacation Assateague Island, Virginia, Chincoteague. And then as I got a little bit older, like upper elementary age, we would go to the Outer Banks. We'd spend 2 weeks at the Outer Banks. And I remember getting one of those, you know, gas station specials, boogie boards, you know, with the canvas or the burlap.
The shark on it.
Yeah, the burlap shark, and it just like ripped every nipple and mole.
Only last four waves.
Everything ripped, just shredded it off. And I remember, you know, taking some waves with that. Mm-hmm. And I remember there was this kid who had a slick bottom with little bitty fins with a cool, you know, like wrist leash. And he had flippers. I was like, I need flippers. So I borrowed my brother's like size 13s. And I remember losing one and he wasn't happy, but I borrowed the kids. I was like, hey, can I try that? He's like, sure. So I one flippered it out and caught this wave and it just kept going. And like, I went up and I came back down and I turned and went back up. It was amazing to, you know, having a better equipment underneath me.
Yeah.
One, I wasn't getting my stomach shredded, but it was just like, wow, this was what riding a wave feels like, not just going straight and getting destroyed. So then in high school, I was dating this girl and we would take these road trips with her parents. They had an RV and we were at Ocean City, Maryland, and I had a little cash and I saw some surfers and I was like, I want to do that. I was probably a freshman.
Oh yeah.
In high school. And so we went to this surf shop there in Ocean City, Maryland, and I bought this, I think it was called a Wave Dancer. I don't even know. It had dolphins and rainbow on the logo. It was like the dolphins were jumping away from each other with rainbows coming out their rear ends. And
oh, it's perfect.
Yeah. And so I bought this 6'5" thruster, so three fins, glassed in. I got it. And I remember paddling out and not catching a thing. I was by myself. It was probably super choppy. I didn't catch a thing. Mm-hmm. So I tried and I tried for probably every weekend that I could for about a year. And then I stood up for the first time in Virginia Beach, just south of the inlet. I think it was just south of the inlet. And I remember catching that wave, standing up, riding it straight into the shore, jumping off, ripping the leash off, and running up to my girlfriend and her family. I just rode a wave. And I was like,
felt just like Reese on his episode, right?
Yeah, yeah. I am conqueror of the world. But I mean, that was a year's worth of trying it on my own when I could.
And super fast progression.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I catch on to things quickly.
Well, I want to back you up a little bit.
Yeah.
Here on this podcast, we like to educate.
Oh, okay.
Because not everyone, I think, knows everything about surfing. I definitely don't. You're talking about glassed in fins.
Yeah.
Can you explain to me the difference between glassed in or maybe whatever other kind of fins there could be there?
No.
No.
No. So glassed in fins are just that. They are actually fiberglassed into the board. They're fixed. They don't move. Mm-hmm. Fins nowadays, unless you're getting a custom, maybe a twin fin with some glassed in fins, are They drop them in, insert. Some are self-locked. Some you have to have screw in. FCS and futures are kind of the standard in the industry. But, yeah, they pop in and out. You can try different sizes, different, you know, whatevers. Oh, yeah. You know, I've always just bought standard stock fins and just put them in my board. But I asked a guy how important fins were. Or maybe I watched a podcast. And so I was like, I need to go find some fins. So I went to a local shaper around here and I was like, hey, do you have any fins? And he opens this drawer up and he has three, two sides and a center, Mick Fannings. And he goes, try these. Game changer. I was blown away at the flexibility and the bite and everything that those fins did for the board. So I'm no fin expert. I would love to talk to somebody maybe on this podcast in the future.
Oh, yeah.
But game changer. A good fin transformed the way I felt on a wave. Same board, different fins.
I'm going to have to try that, even though I think my first progression should probably be not throwing all my weight backwards. And then maybe after that I'll start getting some actual fins. I've always just done the same stock fins.
Yeah.
So your first wave after a year, you said that, was that in the Outer Banks?
No, that was Virginia Beach.
Virginia Beach. You know, that's where my dad learned how to surf.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I knew Gregory and I bonded a long time ago.
That's where the bromance started.
The bromance with Gregory. That's another story for another
Secretly,
day.
He was the one who pushed you into that wave.
It was.
Well, so Virginia Beach, is that where most of your surfing career was in the beginning?
No. So that was my first stand-up, but then kind of catching that bug. Group of friends all started buying boards. I grew up in the D.C. area in PG County, Maryland. So we were about 2 hours to Ocean City, Maryland, and Delaware beaches, Fenwick and Indian River, and then all of Ocean City, you know, and all the jetties. Then there was jetties all through Ocean City. But we would take road trips. I had a 1974 Cougar, and you could hold five and a washer and dryer. I mean, just everything in this thing. It was a beast. We called it the Vomit Mobile. It was brown. And we'd load the Vomit Mobile up. So I got soft racks, so we'd have boards on top, five to eight of us inside. And for $20, because gas was 89 cents a gallon, we would go from D.C. over to Ocean City, Maryland. And we'd stop at Indian River, Delaware. And then we'd stop at Rehoboth, or we'd stop at Fenwick Island. And we'd just check the surf. And so those kind of get out trips really, I was a kook. I remember buying my first wetsuit, and it was a Long John. Or Farmer John, you know, no sleeves.
Yeah.
And it was tight, and it was probably baggy in the waist and tight around. And I paddled out and duck dove, and that thing filled up with water. And I was like, I can't move. I'm going to die. And so, yeah, just going at it between Delaware, Ocean City, and then we sneak down to Chincoteague, Assateague Island every once in a while. But we would still vacation 2 weeks the Outer Banks. So staying there at near Avalon Pier is where I started doing a lot more, you know, just a better quality wave. And
So breakdown. So I know Outer Banks, that's been a big spot.
Mm-hmm.
So where is that? Is that where, I know you said you had moved out there for a while. Mm-hmm. So how did that look for your surfing career?
So I dream was to live, at the beach and surf. And so I was at East Carolina University and had the opportunity to live out on the Outer Banks, worked at a pizza place, is no longer there, called Pizza Inn, and had four roommates, and they all surfed. And so we would get up early, we'd hit the surf, go to work, and then we'd get off, and if there was waves, we'd surf. If not, we'd play volleyball. And then when we all had like a rare day off together, we'd jump in the car and drive down to Pea Island or head on down towards Rodanthe and Hatteras and just stop on the side of the road and find a spot.
Okay.
Yeah.
So from what I'm hearing, you don't know what you're walking into. Uh-oh. Is this before the days of cams and before the days of surf reports?
There was, you had to call like a long distance call to a surf shop that you knew had one. And so it cost you money to find out what the potential of surf was. Yeah, we just were like, let's just go. There might be ways, there might not be ways.
So that's why we have to pay for parking. That was the premium that we didn't know about.
Goodness.
So the Outer Banks, is that where your wave is?
It is, actually, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's walk into that. Go ahead and let's start painting a picture. What was this session like?
So if I recall correctly, it was a day that we all had off. It was the summer that I was living down there. And we drove all the way down. We checked some spots along the way, but we got to Rodanthe Pier. And we got out of the car and looked at it. And we were like, this is where we're going. It was, I don't know, it was chest to head, maybe a little bigger, and super clean. It was in the morning. We got up early, and we made it down there. And, yeah, we were just stoked. There was nobody else out, so we ran out. There was just, let's see how many were. So it was just the four or five of us. That paddled out, nobody else out, and we were hugging close to the pier because it was peaking up better right there. And it just happened that I was closest to the pier when this set wave came in. And I saw them, they were trying to scratch to it, like, and so I paddled over to it, and the water was clear. You know, the water there is cooler than it is here at Riceville. I think it was in just boardies, and I turned to go, and my friends didn't beat me to the peak, and so I turned to go, and all four of them are, you know, at some distance from me, and so I took off. I'm goofy foot, and so it was a left peeling south from the pier, and I dropped in, and as soon as I dropped in, I went straight into a bottom turn and pulled right underneath the lip, and it peeled right over me. So this was like my first legit barrel too. Mm-hmm. And the water, like I said, between the sun shining through, you know, the wave, and me actually making a clean drop and turning into the pocket, and then that lip just pitching right over me. So boards were a little different then. Mm-hmm. This was another glassed in fin, but they were long, skinny, like guns, not quite a gun, but I had a hot buttered surfboard, 6'4", you know, needle nose with a little squash tail. And it had like a textured top, I guess to grab the wax better. I don't know. It wasn't like super slick. It was kind of like sandblasted look almost, but the bottom was slick. Mm-hmm. The bottom was really good glass. And man, that hot butter just flew.
Could you define a couple of those? You said you had a pin nose and a squash tail and more of a gun style board.
Yeah.
Could you break that down a little bit?
It seemed at the time, and maybe we were just totally clueless to, but it seemed like bigger the board, the better, but the shape was more thinned down, short board look, but longer. And I don't know what they were, you know, thinking then about getting the volume, having volume, but still having length. And I don't know all that. So maybe we could do some research on shapes in the late 80s, early 90s, you know. And that's why I'd love to have a shaper in here. I'd love to get some shapers in here who really know the history of surfboard making and stuff. Anyway, so yeah, just a sick little board. I bought it in Delaware for $200. Delaware has no taxes or a sales tax. And so I paid $200 cash for it. And the reason it was cheaper was it was dinged in shipping, and they had fixed the ding. So it just had this like off-colored patchy spot.
Basically a factory second.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, $200, cha-ching,
easy.
Paid it. And man, that was a fun board. I think I have pictures of it somewhere, but I haven't seen them in a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So dropped in on that wave, bottom turn, you know, which is just driving that rail in the direction you want to go, and coming into the pocket, which is just where that wave is forming, that bowl or that transition before it breaks. And man, I was in the barrel, and the coolest thing about it was my friends were all watching. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean.
Oh, so it's a verified barrel.
Yeah, if I ever could find those friends.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they'd probably be like, oh, he cooked out on it.
But he fell. He didn't
make the drop. Lip hit him in the chest. which was my worst wipeout. I did get a lip in the chest and Nag's head and sent straight to the sand, knocked the wind out of me. Big, heavy, thick lip day. Boom, right to the bottom. Not when I hit the bottom and knocked all the air out of me. You know, you instantly you want to go.
Oh, that's scary.
But I couldn't. You know, I'm underwater. And so I had to fight that urge to breathe, and I'm just getting washing machine tumbled under. And then I come up and I go, and it's all foam. So I'm swallowing, taking in foam. And then another one just comes and just sends me back down to Davy Jones' locker. And I'm under, still don't have a full breath of air. And I come up and man, I was really rattled. Mm-hmm. Like that was, I don't know. I don't know how big it was. But it was big enough that when I dropped in and I thought I was going to tuck under, the lip caught me square right in the chest.
Those are the session enders. Once I have one of those, I'm just like, I'm just going to sit on the beach for a little bit.
So I did. I did. I went and sat on the beach and I contemplated life. And I'm like, man.
It's time for a nap.
Life is short.
Especially on days like today.
Yeah. So that drop in there in Rodanthe, getting in the barrel was just the beginning. And this is kind of, as I started this podcast, this was kind of the idea behind it. Everybody's got their first wave story. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got their heaviest wipeout story.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody's got their best wave story. I mean, even the guy that we were going to have on here, he's from Oklahoma. He's been surfing like 3.5-4 years. He's got a best wave story.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so to encourage people who are giving it a go, you don't have to be 11-time world champion, you know, Kelly Slater, and own 100%. Your own wave pool to have a wave story, you know. Mm-hmm. But to be able to just have a story, and you'll have to listen to the podcast from this guy that we interviewed last week, Tony. Epic. I love what he had to say about surfing. I got the name for the podcast. It won't launch till probably July, but it's called mm-hmm. Surfing State of Mind. It's great. It was great.
I can't wait.
Yeah. So anyway, bottom turn in the barrel, riding down the barrel, came out of the barrel, and the section was kind of walling, and the lip was kind of closing out in front of me.
Yeah.
So I knew I wasn't going to make it through that barrel, and so real quick, I just kind of popped up and did a floater, and so I'm on top of the wave. Now my friends see me come out of nowhere, up on top of the wave, and I just kind of, you know, skirted that floater for, I don't know, it felt like eternity. It was like, you know, like I was Chicken Joe or something. Or just, I was up there. I was just riding it. And then as it pitched over, I kind of free fell and just dropped off the lip and landed it and continued with a top turn to a bottom turn, another top turn. And then it came to the end. Nobody was, maybe they were throwing air at the time. You know, it wasn't like something that today is just mind-boggling what people are doing on airs.
It's crazy. And how young they are doing it.
Yeah. There was that little 9-year-old, 11-year-old at BSR throwing that.
Through a backside, like 180.
The backside flip. It wasn't even a rotation. He just flipped. And like, anyways,
people are too good at things.
So I hit this little in section and just launched myself. The board was in the air. I wasn't attached to it, but that was my air.
Oh, yeah.
So I finished it with an air section. And paddling back out was, my grin was probably huge. And my friends were just stink facing me. They were like, sour that I got that wave.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I could have just gone back to the beach, loaded up in the car, and gone home at that point.
100%.
Yeah. And like two waves later, I took a beating, came up, and the board poked me in the eye. So, I mean, you go from the height of victory and claiming a wave to having your eye poked out by a pointy nose 6'4", hot buttered.
The ocean has a way of doing that.
Humbles
just,
you.
Just like I know you think you're all that, mm-hmm. but let me put you in check real
Watch
quick.
Watch this.
Man, I was just closing my eyes, envisioning that you're saying the sun's going through the wave. Yeah, and
clear.
So was it the feeling of the wave? Was it the setting? Like what was it that made it your wave? Was it just the combination of everything?
Yeah. So having interviewed people on this for these it's a combination of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Like the time stands still. It's like this, the friends and the atmosphere, and then the conditions, perfection. Mm-hmm. And then to score it with just friends, nobody else out.
Oh, yeah.
It was just all of the above. And then it was kind of that, not that I had arrived in surfing, but it was my first really solid connection of maneuvers and connection to the wave. Yeah. And so it was like, yeah, catching that first wave of Virginia Beach was like that hook.
Oh, yeah.
Catching that first wave on that real good boogie board was like, whoa. And this was like that push over the edge to mm-hmm. this is you really want this. This oh, is yeah. you want this to be like a lifestyle choice. And so I remember, so that was after my freshman sophomore year at East Carolina. And, you know, I remember my goal in life was to live at the beach in a shack with a dog and a quiver of surfboard sleeping in a hammock. I mean, that's what I wanted, you know.
I feel like we all secretly want that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That dream never really goes away.
I met a girl in Brazil, though, that has that dream.
Really?
Yeah, she lives in...
Is she living it?
She's living it. She literally lives in a small house, walks out onto the beach in Fortaleza, which is up, if you're looking at the Brazil, it comes up around and it's mm-hmm. where the hump comes out and then it goes back. They get all the hurricane swell, but so no hurricane.
So it's up on like the northeast side of it?
Yeah, that northeast side, Fortaleza. Okay. Beautiful, beautiful city.
So you're mentioning a pretty exotic place. How much surf traveling have you done?
Not a lot. You know, like mm-hmm. as I talk to people on this podcast, it's interesting. You know, not just the addiction to surfing, but the drive to invest money in travel mm-hmm. to go to these cool places that we've only seen pictures of.
Oh, yeah. It's a free sport, but the most expensive sport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so up and down the East Coast, let's see, have I surfed anywhere north of Delaware? We tried, my son and I tried to do Long Island and New Jersey. It just wasn't breaking. And then we made it back to Ocean City and surfed Ocean City, slept in a little bit. We'd been up for 36 hours and we slept in knowing that the wind was supposed to turn. And when we had breakfast and got out, the wind had turned and it was firing. That was fun. Ocean City in December, I think. It was cold. And then I haven't surfed Florida or Georgia or South Carolina. So North Carolina, Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, East Coast. My son lived in South Africa for a little while, so I had to go check on him.
Just make sure everything's
yeah,
right.
You know, yeah. Yeah. He was living in Jeffreys Bay, and the day that I got to J-Bay, it was 20 foot and just firing, and I remember walking down the beach with my coffee. There's cliffs, you know, where you can kind of stand there, and people were just lining the cliffs looking down.
Man.
And I have never felt energy of and observed power like I did with those waves at that spot, and these guys taking off look like 40 mile an hour, 50 mile an hour. Oh. They were just sending it and sailing. And I was like, nope, not me. You know, I'd been surfing a while up to this point, but I was like, no. So went back and my son paddled out. It was probably at that point, it was the swell came. It was all the locals were saying, this is an unusual time for this type of wave. And so it was swell was leaving throughout the day. And my son paddled out. It was probably 12, 15 feet. Got some pictures of him. And then I went and bought a board and South African Air, but by the way, boards travel free. Mm. And
good to know.
Yeah. So I bought a board and paddled out at Tubes, not Super Tubes, but Tubes. Mm-hmm. Coins. And surfed Coins with my son at about probably 6 to 8 foot. And you take off on one of those rights, and I'm goofy foot, so that's backside. Plus, you're right over this rock reef that's full of mussels, and it's like it's real deal. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. And then just to take off and to ride one, turn around, and everybody that you just left is tiny. You just went, you know, so far, farther than you've ever ridden. So South Africa, got to go to California and surf a couple times in California. That was really cool to go to some iconic spots and, you know, surf there. Newport was amazing. I got a friend that lives in Long Beach. I got to get him on the podcast.
Oh yeah.
He drives down to Bolsa Chica and Cliffs and, Huntington all the time. In fact, he texted last year. He's like, hey, I just got bumped by a great white. Love you guys. I'm still alive. I was like, okay. We paddled out at Bolsa Chica, and there was a, I don't know, walrus, sea lion, whatever, is huge, and had this massive bite taken out of his neck.
Oh,
and he was just in the white water, just churning like this. We're like, hope whatever got a hold of him is not still out in the water.
He's already full. We're good.
Yeah, we are. So then I've been to some pretty beautiful places in the world, Central and South America. Been to Chicama, Huanchaco, but never surfed there. Lima, I've seen waves, seen surfers there. I've seen surfers in Israel. They're in Netanya. And, man, I met a surfer the last time I was in Israel who was working this little cafe. And we got to talking about, I almost missed my ride back to the place because he and I were talking surfing, but never surfed Israel. I've been, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, El Salvador, but never surfed. Always there on mission trip or business. And then Puerto Rico, I had a chance to travel down to Puerto Rico a couple times. And this last time you were able to tag on that trip, man.
That was a good one.
We scored Wilderness. Super, super fun for 5 days.
And then Surfers Beach scored us.
Oh, good. Yeah, Surfers Beach scored. Yeah, the tabletop was heavy that day.
Dude, it was both days. The paddle out's ridiculous.
Yeah, but Surfers Beach was great to end it on because what we had at Wilderness and what we had at that first part of Surfers Beach was super, super fun. Mm-hmm. And this was the ocean and Puerto Rico saying, bye, y'all.
You've had your fun.
You've had your fun.
You've clogged up the lineup for long enough.
Yeah, now you're gonna pay. So yeah, that's kind of it as far as international or surfing outside of
just something slight.
North Kakalaki. Yeah.
Where's your go to spot?
Well, Wrightsville.
Wrightsville.
Yeah, in between people.
Surfing the maze.
Surfing the zoo of the South End. No, there's some good sand kind of everywhere. You just got to go find it or run up to, Topsail Surf City or occasionally Carolina Beach. But Wrightsville Beach is where I go. It's, I can get down there and get a quick hour in and go back to work or whatever's next. So, yeah, Wrightsville Beach is a cool place.
That's good. Do you have your own little surf squad that you're rocking with?
So I'm in this massive text called, what is it called now? Happy's a Grom, or the guy that looked like Happy's a Grom.
I think currently Breeze is the Grom.
Breeze is the Grom. So yeah, and it's find out where people are going and getting up with them. But I've got a couple of other guys that I get together with, and it depends on what's firing, what's not, or. Yeah, it's cool. It's cool to paddle out and to know people in the lineup.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
that's good. That I had never experienced. Like, I didn't even know there were that many people like in our group that was that into surfing.
Yeah, but
I don't think I've checked the cams since I've been in that chat
because they just let you know.
Yeah, I'm just like, is anyone going? They're like, yeah, it's
Yeah, you
it's
get the report.
3 feet at 7 seconds. The winds are this way. I'm like, well, then I know exactly where I have to go. I'm
right,
fine.
Right. That's so fun.
That's good. That's good. Do you have any surf trips coming up?
No. Just surf camp all summer, and then I don't have anything planned. I'm hoping to get back to Puerto Rico and do another surf and serve adventure. Mm-hmm. Maybe two or three of them this winter. So we'll see. I'd love
to keep me updated on that.
We'll definitely do.
We're flying out of that round trip ticket to Florida that I heard about.
Oh, driving down and fly out of there?
Might save a good bit of money doing that.
We might. We've got connections along the way.
Yeah, that's good. That definitely was a life-changing experience. I never, in so many ways, just to see the people we were with and the waves that were out there, that was not just spiritually life-changing, but physically and mentally. And man, it's... I can't wait to get back out there. I can't wait to hear how Will's doing.
Yeah, he comes back today, doesn't he? 15th? No, tomorrow's the 15th.
Yeah, he comes back tomorrow.
Yeah, Will.
All four wisdom teeth pulled out.
Welcome home.
Welcome home. But yeah, that definitely has been. I feel like there are like stages in surfing where you have like you were saying, you had your first wave, And then, well, you had like your wave where you like felt what the wave was like, where you mm-hmm. had your bodyboard and you're going up. And then you had your first stand up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had your Rodanthe experience.
Right.
And then from there, you know, like for me, if you were to ask me, like, what's your wave? Like 3 years ago, I'd have been like, oh, I had this sick, crumbly half a foot at 3 seconds at Riceville Beach on my wave storm, you know, and then it transfers from there to there, you know, and you kind of get to experience your, like you said, your first wave, then your hook, then like this Puerto Rico trip where you get to experience a long period of what is this, I guess, surfing lifestyle mm-hmm. like, where you get to just wake up, surf, like absolutely surf your brains out, work hard, go to bed, repeat.
Right.
And I don't know, it's just beautiful how that, you know.
Yeah. And not just changing. those you know, that journey of becoming a better surfer and enjoying those different elements, but like there was a time where like I moved to Wisconsin and I had to sell that hot buttered and my wetsuits, and I had to say goodbye to surfing for a while. Because I was going to Bible college and I needed money to pay for school. And so it was letting go of something that was near and dear to me, for something greater, a greater good, a greater cause. And I came back, and for 15 years, I lived 2 hours away from the ocean. I was in the Raleigh area, and you know, I was kind of cautious. I was married, had a job or two, had kids, and I didn't want another obsession to take away from what was important.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember coming down, doing the day trip down with my family and, you know, seeing some surfers, and I'm like, could I do that again? And then I had 3 kids in my youth group back in Cary. I was serving at a church there as youth pastor, and they're like, PK, we want you to teach us to surf. I was like, great. I don't have a surfboard, and, you know, I don't know when I'll get one. You know, I was on a youth pastor's budget with wife and kids. And one day I get a knock on my door, and in comes these 3 kids with a surfboard, another glassed-in fin. You know, this would have been like 1995. Yeah, it was a Bazelle. I think Sweetwater here in town used to sell Bazelle.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, here you go. You don't have any excuses now. It was as yellow and brown, sun faded as any nasty looking surfboard could be. But hey, so we
it floats.
Yeah, so we would travel. We would jump in the car and go down, and kind of reignited the passion. And then having the chance to move down here in 2010, you know, I'm fully addicted now. So
now you've built up a little bit of a quiver. Now I've had the pleasure of viewing that in your garage and unloading it. What does surfing look like for you now? Like what is this addiction turned into, or is it a lifestyle?
I don't know. My lifestyle is everywhere, but I would like to say I'm a decent surfer. I think I'm a better surfer now than I was at 25 for sure. But it's a gift. It's an opportunity for me to leave the busyness and everything on the beach and to paddle out and enjoy a moment with friends in God's creation and just ride.
Yeah.
You know, and not take it so serious, but when that wave comes my way, I want it. You know? Yeah. It's a different mentality. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's a soul surfer mentality, but it's definitely a release and a refreshment. Even though I come back, I'm tired. I just
need
to go
immediately to bed.
Yeah, eat some food and go to bed. So
have that surfer hunger.
It's definitely a more social time now.
Yeah,
and it's just sweet. It's a sweet habit that I hope I can continue.
100%.
You know, for the next 50 years.
Yeah, that is true. You know, that feeling of, you know, you go out there and you kind of just leave everything on the sand. Mm-hmm. And I always thought, you know, I was like, oh, you kooks talking about leaving your problems on the sand. Then I grew up and started having problems, and I was like, I'm leaving them on the sand.
Yeah.
And it is that, you know, you get to really experience creation. You get the beauty of, like, it's like a perfect mixture of beauty and power. Mm-hmm. And not only do you get to harness it, but you get to, like, you get to submit your will to the will of the creation.
Yes.
And be able to feel it flow through you. That's too many F's in a sentence for me to figure out. But yeah, that and
I'm one with the ocean. The ocean is one with me. I'm one with the ocean.
And then you have the great experience where, you know, the only time I'm ever excited to be dropped in on is whenever there's this old kook turning around taking pictures.
Hey, I know that guy.
Yeah, he's gotten me on a few of them. But I remember at first I was like, someone dropping in on my wave, and I was like, that's hilarious. I love that. Do it again.
That's all right. I think I've seen your butt drop in on me while I've been in the barrel a couple times. So yeah.
Or you're about to catch a sick wave and all of a sudden I'm right there at the bottom.
I thought you were dead.
I knew I was dead. Yeah. I refused to duck dive until it's the last second, and I looked up and I was like, all right, Lord, you're calling me home, and I submit. Yep. Here it goes. That for a little backstory to those of you who didn't get to experience that, I totally was in PK's way
on a big bomb.
Big. It was, that face was
10 to 12 foot.
10 to 12 feet after we had been paddling all day trying to get to position. And I'm whooped. So I've got my head down and I'm paddling. I'm exhausted. I've been paddling for almost an hour at this point. Yes, not even an exaggeration.
No exaggeration.
And then I could feel, like, you know, you can feel the water coming up. And I was like, okay, here comes a wave. And I look up and I just see the nose of, you were on a Holy Grail, I think.
Hypto-crypto.
I was on the Holy Grail. Yeah. You were on the Hypto. And you were right there at the top third of the wave. And we both made eye contact. And my face just went to sheer fear. And yours went to, like, concern. And I could see you grab the rails or the sides of your board.
I sat down to put the brakes on.
Yeah, and then the lip just caught you and brought you up and over. And I was like, well, I guess now I have to duck dive. So I managed to get out unharmed, and then PK manages to get out way down on the inside. He got thrashed so hard.
I got destroyed.
I felt horrible for that one. I was like, dude, that was the wave of, and it was a left wave, wasn't it?
No, it was a right. Oh, it was a right side for me.
Well, even it was a beautiful one of those, like, waves of the week.
Yep.
we put all the work in there. But I imagine the more pictures you take, the closer I am to I guess payback.
Okay. On that. Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
But yeah, that man, that was a beautiful ride into your experience at Rodanthe and just kind of your lifestyle, your life story of how you fell in love with surfing and what it's turned into today. But yeah, what's next on the radar for you?
Tomorrow. Yeah.
Yep. Well, what does tomorrow hold? What have you got?
Surf camp in the morning, and then what do I have tomorrow evening? I don't know. It's on the calendar. It's busy. It's a busy week.
Depends on how good the waves are, eh?
No. No, it's just a busy week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel you, man. This has been an epic.
It's been fun, man.
Yeah. I appreciate you letting me interview you.
Yeah.
Today's episode of the My Wave.
Awesome.
I don't know. How much time do we have?
We're done? Yeah.
Well, do you know that in the Bible?
No way.
They mention surfing.
It does?
This is the oldest reference, historical reference to surfing that I know.
Is it legit?
I would say it's legit. And
can you
verified.
Believe anything in the Bible?
Well,
that's a whole nother topic.
What I would say, you know, it's the divine inspired word of God.
Okay.
So it is, as people say, God's word.
It is.
So, well, there's a story of an apostle named Paul, and he's on this ship.
No,
in Acts 27.
Go on.
Oh, and it gets epic.
Come on now.
The winds and the rains, they pick up, and they wreck. They hit.
They got.
I
wrecked.
Imagine they got wrecked. They got shipwrecked. and everyone's in the water. They're scrambling, and it says they all made it to shore.
Yeah.
Some on pieces of the boat.
No way.
Some on boards.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yes.
You can't say that it wasn't absolutely firing that day.
The number you have called is no longer in service.
I think that's our cue.
That's our cue, isn't it?
Simon, thank you, man.
PK, it's been a pleasure.
It has been.